All right. So the nuts and bolts of leading a life Bible study. So when Eric and I talked about this, he said your target audience are basically your life Bible study directors, kind of the class coordinator. So that is who this is geared for. I'm here to talk to directors or class coordinators. If that's not you, that's still what I'm going to talk to. So you're going to sit around and listen. But I just want you to know who my target audience is. So if that doesn't apply to you, you go, man, this wasn't for me. I told you in advance who I was going to talk to. This is my contact information. I'll leave it up there for just a moment. I encourage you, if you think you may hear something that I say that you want more information about, you can shoot me an email, shoot me a text, get connected with me, and I'll share whatever further info you want. For those of you that are like her husband in the very first session, he waited to the end to ask for my contact info again. I can pull it back up at the end. He wanted to see if what I said was worth asking any questions first, and so then he wanted the contact info. I'm just kidding. So here we go. Number one is cultivating an atmosphere of warmth and friendliness. This is the number one job I'm kind of going through. So what I told the earlier group when Eric asked me to do this, I said, this is awesome. I'm more than happy to do this, talk about aligning your class, but here's what you need to understand. You're giving me 45 minutes to cover 3 hours, okay? So we're going to do an hour every 15 minutes and hopefully get through it, but I'll tell you, the first time I taught this, we only got through 2 hours of the material, so we'll see if we can get through all of it in this one. So I put it kind of in order of what I think is the most important, so that's the direction that we go. So number one is cultivating an atmosphere of warmth and friendliness. This is your role. So why do people join a particular church? 9% of people join based on spiritual reasons. 9% for spiritual reasons. 11% based on the location of the church. They really don't know anything about the church. They don't really care much about it. It's just, it's convenient. It's easy for me to get to, so I'm going to go to that church. Okay, location. 39% based on the influence of the pastor. 44% based on the influence of family and friends. But 52% will join based on a warm and friendly church, all right? So that's why it's so important as a director, class coordinator, for you to cultivate and create a warm and friendly environment. That's what you need to focus on in your life Bible study. The true test is not how we treat one another, but how we treat the stranger that is among us, based on Leviticus 19:34. This means making sure that no one feels unwelcome when they walk in the room, right? We want to make sure that we're creating the right atmosphere, that everyone feels engaged, connected, and wants to be a part of it. What's the difference between a guest and a visitor? Everyone should be treated as a special guest. The reality is, the difference between a guest and a visitor, a visitor is just passing through. A guest is someone that you desire to be here. We want you, we want to make them feel like we want them here, right? So to do that, we give them the best seat in the house. So I didn't find a recliner in this room when I got here, but I know all your classes have recliners in them for your guests. So the reality is, what you want to do is, when you set up your room, you want to make sure that you figure out what's the best seat in the house, okay? And then you teach your members not to sit in the best seat in the house. Save that for the guests that are walking in the door. So in this room, the best seat in the house are those back two tables, okay? And the reason those are the best seats in the house is because it's furthest away from the teacher and it's closest to the door. And so you want to give guests the easy access in case y'all do something weird in your class that they don't like, they can sneak out real quick. You want to give them a quick exit strategy, but you also want to position them so that they don't feel like they're in the center of attention, right? Now, I didn't cover this in the first session, but I'll give you a couple of extra hints because we have a few extra minutes than we did in the first session. It's not great to single out guests, right? Now, my director did this in my class this past Sunday, and I had to talk to him afterwards about it. We should never, a guest walks in late, nobody's had a chance to meet him yet, you're the director, you're up there talking, and you go, oh, we just had some guests walk in the room. Why don't y'all introduce yourselves? Okay, you're putting them on the spot. They don't like that. Okay, we can get away with it when we know that it's a church member that's just class hopping. Okay, And we've seen them around the church, so they're class hopping. Okay, we can tolerate that. But if you don't know who they are, you've never seen the church, they're a guest, you need to let. So what we do is we go and greet them when they come in, and then one of us will introduce them. We don't get them to stand up and talk about themselves. We do the introductions, right? So I'd say, this is Tim and Patricia Knapp, and they have been married for X amount of years, and they have X amount of kids and this many dogs, and they just moved here from wherever. And so we do all the talking. We never ask them to speak. That's making them feel welcome. Now, if they choose to speak up, they will, right? But we don't put them in a position to force them to do that. So if someone comes in late, you wait till after class and you beeline to get to them and greet them, right? And you try to introduce them to people that are leaving, but don't single them out if you're up there bringing people in. You never have a second chance to make a first impression, right? Now, this is an old marketing saying. It's true out in the business world, but it's true for the church too. You never have a second chance to make a first impression. What they experience when they walk in the door of your class, you can't take that back. So I've told this story in the past couple of sessions because it applied, so I'll tell it again. So we were visiting churches when we moved back to Texas, up in Dallas, and we were visiting Sunday school classes, and we went into this one class that the rows were all set up facing forward. We walked in the door. Everyone was seated facing the front of the room. No one turned around when we walked in. No one acknowledged us when we walked in and took our seats. When it was time for class to start, the director walked in from the hallway, walked up to the front of the room, and made his announcements. He then walked out the back door, and the teacher walked in the door, taught for 45 minutes, and then walked out the back door, and then the class stood up and left. Nobody talked to each other. Nobody was really looking at each other. We had a lecture. I'm sure it was a fine Bible study, but it was not engaging or connecting. It was not a group that we wanted to be a part of. My impression was, I have no desire to hang out with these people because they're not warm and friendly. They didn't try to connect with us. They didn't try to get to know us, and we were the guests. Now, I'm a pastor, okay? We didn't go over, I serve the Southern Baptist of Texas. It's the state convention that Houston's First is connected with. It's one of 42 state conventions, the Southern Baptist, like blah, blah, blah. My background is I've been Ben Pritchett, right? I'm a minister of education, executive pastor in mega churches. So that's what I've done. And so I go into churches all the time, and I deal with people not talking to me because I'm some strange expert coming in to criticize what they're doing and all of this other stuff. And so I'm accustomed to being ignored. But when I'm going to the class in my church where I'm trying to find a Bible study so that my wife feels like she can connect with people, then I don't want to be ignored. I want to find a class that we can connect with, that people are friendly. Create a warm and friendly environment. They didn't create a very good impression. So the next class we go to, we walk in the door, we had about six different couples that came up and talked to us. Over the course of a number of weeks as we visited that class, other couples kept coming up and talking with us. Different ones every single week. And we said, this is a class we can join. And so we joined that class. About 8 months into it, we found out why they acted this way. See, every year the church sends out a roster and says, please tell us who your class leaders are. And so the director stood up and said, okay, it's time for us to let the church know who our leaders are. So obviously I'm still the director, your teacher's still the teacher, here's your outreach leader, here's your prayer, here's your shepherd team leaders, blah, blah, blah. And then he gets to the line that says greeters. And he says, now then, let me remind you. I'm writing down on the greeter line who our greeters are. And in this class, the greeters are the entire class. We expect everyone to greet. So I'm writing right now, entire class, and that's what I will turn into the church as who our greeters are. That told us the culture of that class. The culture of the class was we're all responsible for greeting. And that's why those few weeks when we were visiting, all of these different couples kept coming up and talking to us and greeting us. They all saw it was their job to serve as a greeter. You never have a second chance to make a first impression. So you have the 7-minute rule. You all know the 7-minute rule. 7-minute rule is the first 7 minutes that someone is on your church's property, the first 7 minutes they're in your department or class, the first 7 minutes they're in worship. Those 7 minutes determine whether or not someone is coming back to your class. Think about it. You go to a restaurant and you stand at the hostess stand for 7 minutes, having never been acknowledged. What does your Yelp rating say about this restaurant? Right? Within 7 minutes, you've made a decision about how you're going to respond to this restaurant. The same thing's true in your Bible study class. In Life Bible Study, the first 7 minutes when someone walks in the room, what are they experiencing? Now, in a multi-hour church, classes have to start on time and end on time. And so someone comes in and they know Bible study starts at 9:30 and it's 9:36 and nothing's going on yet, and 9:40 nothing's going on yet. What's going through that guest's mind?
How disorganized.
Let me tell you the specific words that's going through their mind. It'll be a different word, but these are my words. These jokers are going to run late because they didn't start on time. That's it. So my class, we meet at 11 o'clock, right? We're supposed to end at 12:10. 11 o'clock, 11:05, 11:10, and our director hasn't started the class. It's not just guests that are thinking that. I'm thinking it. These jokers are going to run late, right? And that's going to frustrate me because I'm trying to get out and go eat lunch. So it's a very spiritual thing. I mean, you heard Ben talk about it and David talk about it. You're supposed to eat because you're Baptist. They both said it from the pulpit, so it must be true. It's like the internet. If it's said from the pulpit, it's true. Anyway, so what's happening the first 7 minutes of your class? Do people experience disorganization? Here's another thing. It doesn't mean that your class has to actually start 11. Are they experiencing warmth and friendliness? Is it fellowship? Engagement? Connection? Community? Or is it a lot of people sitting around in their little groups, having their own private conversations, ignoring everyone else? The first 7 minutes, what's taking place? That's important. Attitude is a little thing that makes a world of difference. A rapid response required. So here's the information. Someone visits your class. Pull all this up. Someone visits your class. If you return the visit within 36 hours, there's an 85% chance they will return. When is 36 hours for most of our Sunday morning Bible study classes?
Tuesday afternoon.
Is it?
Monday afternoon.
Monday afternoon. 36 hours. 24 would be Monday morning. 36 would be Monday evening. So by Monday night. Now, I call this the Walmart visit. Okay? Now, if your class is organized, and look, even in a regional church, you can do this. I wish I should have done this. And how patient are y'all? How patient? I'm going to run you late now.
But we're going to miss Cinnabon.
They built in 15 minutes break, though, so I think I can do this. Give me 1 second. I mean, it's not that this is like super important. It's just absolutely.
So are you currently a North American Mission Board trustee?
I am a trustee for now. Thank you for asking.
I saw your folders.
Oh, my trustee folder? Yeah. All right. So I love technology, right? We used to have to do this. So again, I'm a minister of education by trade. So I used to have to buy me a map. Then I have to draw this on the map, have to find all the addresses. But then Google came along, and Google Maps came along. So this is my Bible fellowship group, okay? We live all over Dallas-Fort Worth, okay? I got somebody out in, well, they've actually moved from Trophy Club. This is an old map. But I've got somebody out in Flower Mound, down in Irving, so all over Plano, Frisco, Dallas, right? So whoever visits our class, we can see on this map who's closest. And we can tag that person to make a visit. So we can say,
show up at their house?
Do what?
Show up at their house.
Yeah, show up at their house. That's the stat. Within 36 hours, 85% chance they'll return. Okay? Knock on the door. Now, here's the deal. They don't even have to be home. You leave a note. Okay? The whole point of it is they know somebody stopped by. This is old school stuff. We used to do this in the olden days in Southern Baptist life. Guess what? It still works. This is actually how churches grow. Northeast Houston Baptist Church has visited thousands of homes, planted a couple of churches over in the Humble area by going and knocking on doors. Right? This stuff still works. We still do this. I still recommend. There's very few communities. Now, we don't do this in Utah. Right? That's where the Mormons go knocking on doors. If you knock on doors in Utah, they think you're Mormon. So we don't go do it in Utah. But around here, we can still do this. There are a few communities that are gated that you can't get into. You don't force yourself into a community, right? We're talking about the ungated communities that are open access, go knock on the door. There are stories of people climbing the fence to go see someone, and you get in all types of trouble with the police when you do that, right? Don't do it. So that's not what we're talking about. But anyway, no, you can map out your class, where they live, and when someone visits, say, hey, Tim, here's a Walmart visit, right? It's called a Walmart visit. When you run into Walmart in the next couple of days, just drop by and thank them for visiting. Even if they're not at home, you're just going to leave a note on their door that says, hey, stop by. Thanks for coming to our class. If I can answer any questions for you, here's my contact info. Tim.
The problem with that, but right now, they say, okay, when you have a visitor at class, have them fill out the visitor contact card on the iPad and all that.
Right.
And all you do is get a link that has the person's name and the ability to respond to them by email. There is no phone number. You don't get a phone number. You don't get any of their contact details. Just a name and a way to email them.
And I would say, y'all figure out your church systems and all of these things. System. If it were me, I would make sure I'm getting a mobile phone number because people are more likely to text than they are to email. And so mobile phone number is more important than anything, especially when you start dealing with the emerging generations. Basically Gen Z and below, it's all texting. It's not going to be emails. It's not going to be any type of other social media. You want to make sure that you can connect via text.
You can get the addresses through Rock. If you Rock as you get it, talk to Belinda, but not immediately.
Not immediately is what he's saying. You have to do the research.
I don't think you can get the visitors ones.
You can call membership services and ask them.
I think the general rule of thumb is they have to process it on Monday, so you may not be able to get it to us.
But if they're in your class, you can get it from them
directly.
In your class directly, if you create a system for doing that, right? So the whole thing is rapid response, okay? You saw the numbers. If you respond immediately, you fast enough. Emails, phone calls, those are all fine, but they do cut the results in half. Staff members
going to get 100% response on text.
100, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Text will work in this day and age.
Email, maybe 10.
Yeah, exactly.
I typically do both. I send both, but I almost get 100% response.
I get more response in texting than I do emails. Emails, I may get a response 3 months later, right? Oh, I was going through my emails and realized I have not responded to you. Thanks, we enjoyed coming to your class 3 months ago. But a text, it's usually within the same day they're going to respond to it. So that's why I recommend don't worry about email. If you can get a text, get a text. Get a mobile number phone.
All right, can you back up one real quick?
So I was going to say, staff going doesn't do any good. All right? Staff visits, they're fine, they're nice, they're cute, but it actually isn't helpful. What is helpful is a layperson, some business leader, some worker that's taken time out of their busy schedule to go knock on somebody else's door. That's what impresses another person. They go, oh, wow, you took time out of your schedule. When a staff member goes, they literally get paid to do that. You know it, and that person knows it. And so to them, they go, he's just doing his job. He's paid to do it. And so that's why it cuts the results in half. Good? All right. Next up, your next responsibility is establishing an appropriate teaching and learning environment. So part of your role as director class coordinator, is making sure that the environment is appropriate for teaching. Now, you can't control every aspect of the environment. In this room, we cannot control the fact that there's an air wall and there's another person right over there that we can kind of hear talking. But I guarantee you it's harder on them because I'm a loudmouth. They can hear me talking more than I can hear them talking, okay? So there's nothing we can do. So sometimes there's things you can't control. You have to work with what you've got. So if this were our Sunday school class, technically what we would do, and if I were in charge here, that person, I would be standing this way, and they would be standing the other way. That way the voices are going against. Now, there could be another air wall on the other side of that, which throws that all out of whack. But the two outside people are facing the outside walls. So we're not disturbing them or doing as little disturbance as we possibly can. So you have to create, but as the director, you need to be thinking through this. How do we need to set up this room to create the right environment in order for them to hear? Why is this important? Well, because there's enemies to what's happening. Now, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, I don't know if everybody's class has these nice, soft chairs. These are wonderful. My church has plastic chairs. Halfway through the Sunday school lesson, I have to stand up and go stand in the back of the room because I'm old and I have a bad back and I can't sit there that long. But it's uncomfortable in certain chairs. And so being conscientious and conscious of the learning environment helps you know what you need to do in the life of your class. There are disturbances. So in my particular class, we meet in the children's building. They felt like that since we're out of space, the smart thing to do was put adults in children's buildings. I actually don't have a problem with this. So we're in the children's building at our hour. What they've done is they've taken the kids down the hall during this hour. So there's a few adult classes along this hallway, but we're still on the kids' hallway. So what does that mean?
Kids' chairs.
Well, they brought in adult chairs for us, so we avoided that. But what it means is it's loud. There's children down the hallway. And if you've ever worked in children's Sunday school, children do not come in the room and sit down and listen to a lecture for multiple moments on end. They play games. They do activities. They sing songs. They run around. At some point, a handful of them have to go use the restroom down the hallway, which means it's going to get louder. So we have to make sure we remember, hey, let's close that door, because when the teacher starts teaching and then the children start yelling, somebody has to go close the door. So, hey, let's head it off in advance. So there's disturbances. There's distractions. So I was going through this earlier, and the gentleman that was sitting right here said, would you mind pulling those blinds down, because those cars driving by are quite distracting when I'm trying to pay attention to what you're saying. So we had to close the blinds a little bit further. So there's distractions. There's disinterest. Now, directors, this is where, and most of our directors are so lovely and so nice and really concerned, and you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but here's the deal. You're in charge of the class. If the teacher is not doing a good job, someone has to tell him, and that someone is you. If the class is disinterested in what's being taught, you need to be paying attention to that. So you need to be observant to the nonverbal cues of your class and give feedback to the teacher. So we just went through this in my class. The director, we had an old director, he left, a new director came in. We were having some problems with the teachers. The old director didn't want to deal with it. The new director comes in, he calls me, he says, I need you to meet with the teachers and talk to them. Now, I've already told you my background, but I'm not on staff at the church I go to. I'm on staff at the state convention. So it's none of my business how they do things, okay? I try to keep my opinions to myself. I don't do a great job with it, but I try. But when my director asked me to meet with the teachers because he noticed there's a lot of disinterest in what's being taught, then I took it as an opportunity for me to educate the teachers on what they needed to do. So we had a meeting to try to coach them into maybe a better way they could be teaching so that the class would not be disinterested in what they said. So you need to pay attention to the nonverbal cues that are going on in your class and be the one to talk to the teacher when there's disinterest happening. When the teacher is using illustrations that are inappropriate for your environment, whatever the issue is, you need to be the one to have that conversation. So, how's your environment? Teaching is creating an experience in which a person changes in some lasting way his understanding, skill, attitude, or values. It involves an exchange of ideas, information, and experiences which lead to change. We talk about this through the context of Romans 12, 1 and 2. Spiritual transformation takes place by the renewing of your mind. We're supposed to be transformed to the image of Christ. And we do this simply by getting into God's Word and applying God's Word to our life. And that's essentially what this is talking about. And you should utilize your environment and your equipment to facilitate the experience of the learner. As a director, you are responsible for making sure this is happening. If you do not see your class growing in their faith, then that means the teaching is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. And that's another opportunity for you to have a conversation with that teacher to address those needs in the life of the class. You may be familiar with the learning retention scale. People are able to retain 10% of what they hear. And so most classes, older classes, still do a lecture-driven format, a Bible study. And in lecture-oriented, people are only going to retain 10% of what they hear. So, sorry, you've heard this joke once before. You get to hear it again. So we get to see how many Aggies we make mad in here. Did you hear about the two Aggie football players that couldn't play in the big game because they needed to pass a test? So they get put in the room to pass a test. Coach sends them in there, and their names are Tiny and Bubba. Tiny's looking over at Bubba, and he's like, Bubba, this test is hard. This test is hard. Like this first question, Old McDonald had a what? What did Old McDonald have? So, man, you are so dumb. Everybody knows Old McDonald had a farm. The answer is farm. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. A little while later, he looks over at him. He goes, man, this test is hard. How do you spell farm? I said, my goodness, you are so dumb. Everybody knows you spell farm E-I-E-I-O. Now, what's the whole point of that? I'm going to teach for about 45, 50 minutes in here, and you're going to retain 10% of that. You're going to remember the illustration. That's all you're going to remember. It's a true story because here's the deal. I heard that joke last December, a year ago, from a pastor in a pulpit. I have no idea what he preached, but the joke stayed with me because you retain 10% of what you hear. Most people will remember the pastor's illustration or the pastor's joke because you're only remembering 10% of what you hear. You remember 30% of what you can see. That's why I like using a PowerPoint, so I can bring it up here. But also, you'll remember 50% of what you see and hear. The whole point of all this is you should be using multi-sensory opportunities in your teaching. So getting your teachers to be a little more creative in what they do. People can retain 70% of what they can say. And then they can retain 90% of what they can do. And that's the whole point of community, of life Bible study, is we're supposed to be teaching people and engaging in life application. And life application is, how does God's Word live out in my life? What can I do with this information that you're sharing with me today? What can I take out of here and go with me? So if your teacher is not moving to life application, then we're selling short the learning process. We're selling short the discipleship journey. We're selling short Romans 12 because they're not engaging fully with God's Word. They're unable to go and do with God's Word. So more is caught than taught. So what do we do with this information? Our third most important part is we make membership meaningful. Make membership meaningful. We've got to interrupt the front door, back door syndrome. This applies to the church as a whole. It applies to individual classes. People are joining your class and people are leaving your class. And it's just like Pastor David was saying downstairs in the main session when he talked about the point he was making was about connecting with people. If someone were to leave the church, if you were to be gone from the church, it's kind of this overview of, if you were gone from the church, would people notice you were gone? Would anyone reach out to you and try to find you and try to reconnect with you? And that's what we've got to make sure, that we've got a system and structure in place so that people are engaging and we can connect with them. So we go back to that map that I pulled up of my Bible fellowship group. And what we have on there, as I mentioned, is you may have noticed the different colored houses. The different colored houses were actually organized by shepherd teams. And each color is a shepherd team. And so we have segmented based on where people live shepherd teams, because our shepherd teams are designed for crisis response. When you live in a mega city, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston area. You have to think through these things. Because people live so far apart, if someone has a crisis in the middle of the night and needs someone to come take care of the kids for them, and they're connected to a shepherd group that person's an hour away because of where they live in the city, it's just not going to happen. So we group ours based on proximity. So a crisis, we have people within 15 minutes. And so if you have a crisis in the middle of the night, there are people on your shepherd team that can get to you within 15 minutes to take care of you and help you out in this need, whatever the crisis is. So this is a part of interrupting the front door, back door syndrome. We can bring people in, but we're also losing people because we're not staying connected. So we've got to stay connected with them. Open the front door and close the back door. That means you've got to be open to guests coming in, but you got to connect with everyone so that you don't lose anyone if they try to get away. That sounded bad, right? But hey, maybe you should think of it that way. Don't let anybody get away, okay? Go after them. Number one reason for incorporating a member is the friendship factor. People are connected with friends. In a study of 100 people, 50% will drop out of meaningful involvement if they have less than two friends in the congregation. Less than two friends. In that study, the 50 people who remained actively involved had 7 to 9 people that they considered friends. Now, here's the deal. Each of us defines friendship differently. Okay, that's obvious. But the whole point of it is they were 7 to 9 people that they're connected with, right? They have relationship on some shape, form, or fashion with. So whatever your definition of friendship is, you have 7 to 9 people that are connected with you at some level of your relationship so that you would stay actively engaged and involved with them. People are not just looking for a friendly church. They're looking for friends. People want relationships. That's why they're coming in. So if you're having a hard time getting people to connect with your class, the question you should be asking is, are we open and receptive? Are we trying to actually develop relationships with people? Are we just kind of here and we just want them to show up and leave? Because if you're just here and wanting to show up and leave, well, I'll be the one to say it. This isn't my church. Let's dissolve your class. Y'all need to go somewhere else and do something else, okay? Because we need classes that are desiring to connect with people. The model of Life Bible Study is a community-based model. So community-based means we need to connect. It means we're going after people to connect with us. Similar life stage, maybe similar age, whatever. Similar proximity of where we live in the city, whatever. We have a connection point that we're trying to do. People want relationships. When people hit a crisis, they either drop out of church or they grow, and it depends on how the church responds to them, right? So, the difficult issue of divorce. So a couple is coming to your Sunday school, your Life Bible Study class. All of a sudden, they drop out. They're getting a divorce. Nobody knows what to do with them. We're scared to touch that. We don't want to be seen as taking sides, right? Let me tell you what the appropriate response is. The women deal with the woman. The men deal with the man. Both groups are still reaching out to that couple, but they're doing it individually now, and they're trying to encourage them to get the assistance they need to not drop out. Because what ends up happening is they drop out and they disappear. We can help people grow through a crisis if we handle it the right way. Doesn't mean they're going to stay in our church, but it does mean they can grow and stay connected to the greater body of God and get connected to another church if that's what needs to happen. Okay? So it's all based on our response. Dropout usually does not happen from a single experience, but usually from a series of experiences. That is, you know, the exception is when it's a crisis situation like a divorce or something like that. Most of the time when people drop out of your class, there's a whole variety of reasons. I can give you a list. So, you know, number one, the teacher is not engaging them. Number two, no one has connected with them for friendship and relationship. They don't ever get invited to go to dinner with other couples. They're, you know, these types of things. So you start adding all this up. You have people that are looking for friendships, and all of a sudden their spiritual needs are not met by the teaching. Their physical needs are not met by relationship because nobody's connecting with them. What do you expect them to do but drop out? We don't leave them any choices because we're not being intentional in our development of relationships with these individuals. So what do? We need to identify the needs. We do this by observation, by research, by surveys, by personal reflection. Here's the thing. If you learn of one need in your class, then it's most likely there's other needs just like it in your class. So usually not an isolated instance, right? So if you think about it, and if you think about it, if you're in a life stage class, if you have a need, there's probably other people that have that same need, right? So my wife and I, we've been married for 25 years now. We don't have kids. That's not something that God chose to do in our life. But, you know, we go through the life stage with everybody. And so you hit these parents that have their kids that are the terrible twos, right? And so all the preschool parents are dealing with the same thing basically at the same time, because what ends up happening in most Bible study classes is we create this unit where we all end up living life together. One woman gets pregnant, they all end up getting pregnant, so we have a bunch of babies. You can't just have one baby shower every year. You have to have 10 in 1 year and break the bank. Anyway, I'm not frustrated not having kids and still having to pay for baby showers. But so the whole focus point of what you're going through at your life stage is impacting. So you get to my age, and what you're dealing with is other adults that are trying to send kids off to school at the same time parents are needing extra care. And so you get this sandwich between the expenses of college care and senior adult care. And we're trying to help both of them figure out how this is going to happen, right? And so that's what my life stage is dealing with right now. So whatever one of you is dealing with, others are going to be dealing with the same thing. And so you can address that when you're life stage driven in your Bible study groups. If members are to stay active, they have to begin a relationship in a small group within a month. And they have to have a job, meaningful service within 3 to 6 months. We need to plug people in into the life. How much time do we have?
About 15 minutes.
Oh, we're doing great then. Look at this. We're going to get through all of this. The structure you create in your class ensures and assures that all are involved. And the whole goal of what we're trying to do in our class is to get people connected and to get them involved, because people that are involved are better connected. People that are better connected are going to be here more often. When they're here more often, they hear God's word more. Therefore, it's just beneficial for them on their spiritual journey more. So for people to remain actively involved, they must have a task they consider significant to the kingdom's work. Here's the thing that you've got to realize. It doesn't matter if you think it's significant. It's what's meaningful to them. They have to find significance in it. But at the same time, if they don't find it significant, don't ask them to do it. Right? We, as the key leaders, should do all the jobs that nobody wants to do, so that we can empower them to do the jobs that they believe God's called them to do, right? Make sense? 80% factor, when a room reaches 80% of its capacity, it is full. So we kind of did a little study in here in our first session, so I've got these numbers off the top of my head. We don't have to do the math this time. Even though we have more time, we could do the math this time. How many people can fit in this room? Just take a wild guess.
50.
So you mean max?
Yeah.
Oh, max?
Yeah.
So 60 chairs. 80.
54.
How many? No, you can fit 100.
Okay, 100. Stop right there. 100, right? 102. 10 square feet per adult. This room is 1,024 square feet. So that means you can fit 100 people in here. Now, not with the tables. We're just talking about the square. No, we're talking about with the how many could fit in this room. And so it's 100 people. So that means 80 can fit in the room, because the 80% rule says that only 80 can fit in here. Once you're running 81, 82, 83, the room is over full, and you need to have a plan. You need to have a strategy. So what is the whole point of that conversation? Directors, class coordinators, you are actually responsible for keeping up with this, the size of your class, knowing how many people can fit in your room. So you go, you know what? You say 100, but we use tables. Okay, we'll figure out what your square footage is based on the tables then. So right now we have enough set up in here for whatever it is, 54 people. We could actually add two more tables in here and extend that to about 66. So we could fit 66 people in this room pretty good. I'm not a great wizard with math, I can do the 100 and make the 80% because that's easy, 180. I have no idea what 80% of 66 is, but you know, you figure that out so you can fit 50 people in the room. So 50% would be full at that point, right? So when we're running 50, we need to either start a new unit or we need to move to a bigger room. But
or
it's up
get,
to the
or get a poor teacher.
Or get a, yeah, get a poor teacher and shrink it back down. Or we have to get creative, right? So we say, okay, look, we like using the tables, but in order for us to grow, we need to get rid of the tables. So you have to create the strategy, and you as the director are the ones that need to create that strategy and know what's going on. You have control over this. You're the one that can funnel that information. So you know what? It's the minister's job to know that stuff. Well, the minister can know that stuff, but he's going to know Tuesday. You're literally in the room the day of. You can know that day what needs to happen. You say, you know what? We're at 85 today. We know that we need to have a plan and start doing something. Man, they got really loud. So analyze your space. Make sure you know what's able to happen in the space. So here's the important information. First impressions, right? The 7-minute rule. You never have a second chance to make a first impression. First impressions, parking, the first 7 minutes, your preschool facilities, creating a warm and friendly environment, and helping in your small group, helping people find a place of service. As a director, nuts and bolts, right? All of these things are nuts and bolts. You want to have a warm and friendly environment. You want to monitor the room. You want to keep up with your space. You want to engage people for the purpose of making sure they're connecting. You are responsible for calling out the called, right? So y'all use, I'm going to fly through these till I get to this next slide that I need. Y'all use place. As a director, you should be encouraging your members to go through place. Personality, learning your spiritual gifts, abilities, awareness, connecting your passions and your experiences in life. That's the place profile. This is an online profile. Go to that link, type in that activation code, fill out the place profile. It gives them information about how God is uniquely gifted and created them to serve, and then you can help them discover how to serve. In my opinion, you should help them discover how to serve within the class first. Don't let those preschool people come take your volunteers away. You get them first. If they don't fit in your class, then you can send them to work with somebody else, okay? But start with you. Be a little selfish here. Come on. So help them figure out how they're uniquely created to serve the church. Then let them know what opportunities are available in the class and in the church as a whole in order to be more effective in serving. Because if they don't have a job in 3 to 6 months, they're not as connected. If they don't have relationships in the first 6 months, they're not going to be as connected. That doesn't mean they're going to leave. Look, I'm a pastor, right? If I show up to your church and nobody befriends me and I'm not serving anywhere in your church, I'm still going to come because I'm a pastor. That's just what we have to do, right? I mean, it's just how God wired us to be. You have some people that they're going to show up no matter what. What we're talking about here is connecting with people that are not connected with the church. This is how you connect with them. They don't have a desire to come to the church in the first place. So if you're going to get them here, you need to be building relationships and then helping them find a way to engage and get involved. All right? All right, we've got a couple minutes left, but they're making so much noise, we'll end it right there. What questions do you have? Don't forget to do your survey when it comes in. It's your last chance to register to win a app.